that no matter what happened, I didn't feel alone. Now, I established that in that third step. But you see, I didn't know how to get close to God. I got closer to God when I was able to come through those defects, to give some of them away, to be all right with my fellow man. Now it's just me and God. I don't have all that wall standing between me and God. And I begin to see things in my daily life that I never saw before. Things that were there, I'm sure. Like, for instance, have you ever gotten to a point where things are just not going very well in your home? And you're getting a little fearful. And all of a sudden, when you get into that fear, one of your main fears will come back upon you. It's just real funny when you play with fear. And so mine, one of those, was the financial deal. And so I was sitting there, and we seemed to be in a really bad place financially, and I didn't know what to do. There wasn't anything to do, and I was scared. And so that morning when I had prayed, I had told God, I said, God, I'm scared about this. I don't know what we're going to do here. And then I went over before I sat down to meditate, and I fed my fish. Well, I got this aquarium, and I put my little fish food on the top of the water, and I sat down, and I just started looking at that aquarium, and I got just really looking at that aquarium. And you know, there were fish that were eating off the top, and then they'd hit that food, and some of it'd go down through the middle, and there were fish that were eating in the middle. And when they hit it, it would splatter some more, and then there were those that were eating across the bottom. Now, there was one little dealy of fish food on the top of the water, but everybody was getting what they needed right where they were. Nobody had to get, the fish that live on the bottom didn't have to come to the top for it. It came down. Those that swam through the middle didn't have to go to the top. It came down. So everybody got what they needed. And when you feed your fish, if you've ever had any, if you put in 2 days fish food, you'll kill your fish. The water will sour. So you have to put 1 day at a time what they need. And I said, that's it. God's going to give me 1 day at a time everything I need. And I was able to turn it over. And I've never worried that much. That's not saying I don't get concerned. But I've not found it necessary to go into that panic anymore, because I know what I was given that day in the meditation. That it's okay. That I'm going to get what I'm supposed to have right where I'm at. I don't have to worry about yours. I don't have to worry about your getting mine. I'm going to get everything I need. I don't know. You know, we have our One Day at a Time book. Now, there are 3 million meditation books out. There's a lot of good meditation books. And I don't know about y'all, but I have a tendency to just, if it's worth doing, do it till you die on the spot. So I had a tendency to get 5 or 6 meditation books and sit down and meditate. And I'd read this one, and then I'd read the next one. And by the time I got to the third one, I didn't know what the first one said. So I found that for me, I read one spiritual reading in the morning and the reading out of either the ODAP or the ADAP. Now, I found for me here a few years ago, I had read my One Day at a Time over and over and over and over till I knew it by heart. And I would shortchange myself because I'd pick it up, look at a page, start reading, and say, I remember this one. And I'd just give it lip service, more or less. I'd just glance down through it. I didn't stop and meditate on it. I just read it. Yeah, I remember that. I remember this. So I took the Alatine a day at a time. I'd never read it before. And I had started going through it. And if you haven't read the Alatine a day at a time, you're missing something. Because it is, they cut through all of the sweet stuff, and they put it just like it is. It is an excellent meditation book. So now I'm in my third year of the Alatine book, and I'm getting new stuff out of it every year. And I'm reading my one spiritual reading in the morning. And then at night, if I want to read something else, I read it at night. But I try not to cram too much, because I don't know about you, but I cannot retain a lot. So I need to have just some main thing that I can center in on and meditate on that. And it's a spiritual truth. Now, you say, well, I don't know how to meditate. Can you worry? If you can worry, you can meditate. Because it's the same thing. You just worry about something good instead of something bad. You just think, give the undivided attention. You know, have you ever thought about when you're worrying, how that you can keep, no matter what you're doing, you can run in your mind and go back to the problem? Then make it just what you're doing. Try doing it with something positive. I can always hear God's voice when I am in good spiritual shape. And now I'm not talking about an audible voice that says, Mary Pearl. It's not that at all. It's that intuitive voice that tells you, do this, don't do that. Why don't you do this? The thoughts that come to you. the things that give you strength to go on, that little nudge of encouragement when you feel down, those are the things that when I am in good spiritual contact with my higher power, when I'm not carrying resentments, when I'm not holding unforgiveness in my heart, all those things will keep me from experiencing the sunlight of the Spirit. All those things are those shadows that separate me from God's love. You know, the step says we sought. Now sought, think about sought a minute. It means you got to seek. You got to go looking for it. You don't just sit there and wait for it to flip a deal on you, you know. You got to seek through the prayer and the meditation. You're going to have to spend some time. You're going to have to take some time for yourself. And I found so many times that I'd say, well, I'm running late this morning. I don't have time to do prayer and meditation. I've got time to screw up my day. But I don't have time to set the tone for my day. If you're already late, you're late. So be a little later. And take time to do. Because when I was late, even when I'd stop and take time for prayer and meditation, my day went better. You know how you used to when you were running late to seem like the whole day you was playing catch up? When I start off with the prayer and meditation, somewhere along the line it all catches up. And I'm not playing that game because I am getting my spiritual nourishment first. It's getting a positive start. Now I want to tell you something about prayers. It doesn't even have to be your prayers. Prayers of others. Prayers of the people in your group are very important for you. When you're in a bad place, call and ask. There's times when I get mad at God and I can't pray. And so I call somebody else and I'll say, I'm mad at God. Would you pray for me? Now, a lot of us are afraid to say we're mad at God. Well, He knows it. See, when I get mad at you, I don't talk to you. So therefore, when I get mad at God, I don't talk to Him either. I treat everybody the same. JD got cancer. That made me mad. And so I wouldn't talk to God about it. And I didn't want to talk to people about it because it was one of those things that the more you talk about it, the more real it became. Let's stay in denial. I don't want to talk about it. It's not really happening. It's not hell and I'm not here. You know, I was so scared. And one of the girls that I sponsor called me and I was crying. And she said, what's the matter? And I said, nothing. You know, are we good? Well, she hung up the phone and she called all the others in the group. And she said, there's something wrong with Murph. Let's pray for her. Well, I can't tell you when it happened, but somewhere during the course of that night, between 11 and midnight, peace came over me. I didn't know if JD was going to live or he was going to die, but I knew we were going to be okay. Now, what happened? It was the prayers that were being answered for these girls who didn't even know what they were praying for because, see, God knew what I needed. So there's always a time that it's good for you to pray for other people. They need the prayer. You need the practice. So pray for them. Every good thought you have can be a prayer. When you're thinking about somebody, somebody comes to your mind, God bless so-and-so. God may be putting them in your mind for a reason. And you see, Linda didn't know when she was praying for me what was going to happen. But when that peace came over me, I knew it would be okay. JD had the surgery. That's been 10, 11 years ago, and he's fine. He's fine. But the thing of it is, I was fine before he ever went in for the surgery. The prayers of other people. We have in our group a prayer request after the meeting is over and after we say, keep coming back. If anybody wants anybody to pray for them, they say, remember me. Pray for me. Pray for my aunt. Pray for my uncle. Whatever. And we do. And we don't even have to know why or who they are by name. And I find it myself, you know, I used to beat myself when I'd say, I can't remember who it was said they needed prayer. God, you remember. I'm putting in the prayer. You put it where it needs to go. Because I don't remember. But I'm doing what I'm asked to do. And I think that that keeps me. I developed God consciousness. God goes with me. I bring Him with me. I take Him with me. I go places with Him. We do lots of things together. I don't like to do things without God. Because when I do things without God, then I'm off by myself and sometimes I get scared. But if I take God with me, do you think there's any way I could come to Omaha, Nebraska and share my insides with you this weekend if I had not asked my God to be with me? Nobody wants to expose themselves like that. I have to ask God to take care of my thinking. If God takes care of my thinking, my actions take care of themselves. Because my actions will follow my thinking a lot of times. Now, in the beginning, we have to take actions against our thinking. But then, after a while, I can get to the point where I can have God to direct my thinking. And when I have got God in my mind, it's very hard for me to act ugly toward you. I found that the best way, God has showed me a lot of tools in dealing with people. And one of those is to act as if. Now, we have an expression called fake it till you make it. I don't like that because it sounds so phony. But to act as if until I can, that I can grab onto. Like, for instance, I can act as if the kind and loving daughter until I can become one. I can act as if the kind and loving wife until I become one. And if I don't know how to be a kind and loving wife, ask someone who is and say, how do you do that? How do you do that? God will reveal these things to you if you're willing to reach out and ask the other people to help you. That's what we're there for. And it's just a darn shame that people will die in this program, and I have seen people die in this program for the lack of ability to reach out and say, I need help. And I'll tell you who the worst ones about it, and that's your old-timers. I have been the old-timer in my group, and I would be dying and refuse to reach out for help because, you see, I didn't want, my ego wouldn't let me go back to those others for help. And that's crazy. Sometimes the oldest member in the group is the one that's in the worst shape in your meeting. Don't forget your old-timers. Trying to ask God for decisions or answers to my problem. You know, it says asking only for the knowledge of God's will for your life. God, what do you want me to do today? What do you want me to do? If I've got a decision that's really bothering me and it's something that has to require action, say like I've got something I've got to know by this afternoon, I'll say, God, this is the deal. I've got to know by this afternoon. I've got to give somebody an answer. Now, what would you have me do? And nothing happens. Okay? I'll say, well, God, these seem to be my choices. And I will talk my choices over with someone. And I'll say, do you see any other choices? Is there another option out there that I haven't seen? You know, sometimes we don't have, you know, I used to think you have to do something. You don't always have to do something. Sometimes you can just not do and it's okay. But sometimes things require immediate action. And so I say, okay, God, I don't seem to be getting a direct message here, something that I can really put my hand on. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do this. And if this is not what you would have me to do, shut the doors. And I've learned that I have to follow this up with something else. And God, show me a shut door. It's funny how I'll bang into a shut door time after time after time after time and not know it's a shut door. So I need God to show me a closed door. You know, I can beat my face flat trying to get through a closed door. And you have to be careful because self-will will tell you that door is open when it is not. You know, when I say it has to be this way or no other way, and then you get there and say, well, maybe I can change it a little bit. I'll be willing to settle for this or that. I find that that doesn't work. So many times, you'll get to the situation, somebody asks you something, you hear something come out of your mouth that you didn't even know was there. And there's the answer to your solution. A lot of times in talking over your problem with someone else, you'll know what your solution is. But what you're wanting is somebody to rubber stamp your cockamamie idea. You know, I find this especially true when you have to call 10 people. When you do that, you're trying to find somebody to agree with you. You don't want the answer. One of the lowest points for me was after I came in the program. And it was when I was that sick newcomer and I could not reach out and ask for help. And I was afraid that if I told you that I was in the shape I was in, that you wouldn't love me anymore. You'd say, she's a phony. And so I went to my group, and it really hurt, but I had gotten on my knees in my living room, and it didn't seem low enough somehow, so I got flat on my face on the floor, and I said, God, my life's unmanageable. I'm powerless, and I'm hurting, and I need help. And I went back to my group, and I told them that very thing. I said, I am in pain. I'm hurting. My program's just shot out the window. I'm back to Hello, Al-Anon. And I cried, and that was something that I just wouldn't do in front of a group, for God's sake. And I just knew that they weren't going to love me anymore. And after the meeting was over that night, a little old girl came over to me, and she said, you know, I love you more tonight than I've ever loved you because you became human. She said, when you never came to the group and told us about your problems, I always felt like I was doing wrong if I had a problem. That if I'd have been working the program like I should have, I wouldn't have had a problem. And I'm not here to tell you, that's not the truth. You're going to have problems. Problems call life. Life is a series of problems that we learn by going through. You don't learn by hiding from. You don't learn by evading. You learn by walking through it to the other side. And you don't have to walk alone. Not in here. I love the 11th step prayer, that prayer of St. Francis. You know what's amazing to me is God doing the little everyday miracles. I love little everyday miracles. Like, for instance, these earrings. These earrings are a miracle. Not the fact that I have them, but the fact that I lost them in heaven. Now, one of the girls I sponsor gave me these one year for Christmas. And this past Christmas, I was out at the mall looking for some Christmas gifts. And I missed them. I missed one. And so I went back to the JCPenney's where I thought I had maybe lost it. And I asked the woman, did they see anything? We all looked around. We couldn't find it. And I left her my card and I said, just in case it turns up. And it did upset me there for a minute. And then I said, wait a minute, God, I'm going to give these earrings to you. And if I'm supposed to have it back, okay. And if not, you help me to accept it. So I went on and nothing happened. 3 weeks later, now 3 weeks, Christmas time rush, you know, 3 weeks. And they called and they said, you know, it's the strangest thing, but we found your earring. Now, I saw your card on my desk yesterday morning, and I said to myself, if we hadn't found it by now, might as well throw the card away, and I forgot to. And she said, we've got your earring. And I said, that's fantastic. I said, God is so good. And I went out to get my earring. And when I went out there to get it, I was waiting for her to wait on this other girl, and sitting right there at the counter was this black wool skirt with a drop waist that I'd been wanting one for a long time and hadn't ever found one, and it was in my size. And when she got there, I said, what's with this skirt? And she said, I don't know. We've had it in the back. I don't know how come we hadn't had it out, but it's the only one we've got like that, and I can give it to you for $15 if you want it. And I said, you know, God really has a sense of humor. I said, I need that. It wasn't that I just wanted it, but I had been needing it. And as it turned out, my first experience to wear it was to a funeral. But nonetheless, it was so funny because, you know, I just went back to get the earring and God put something else that I'd been wanting at any rate right there for me at a price that I could afford without any problem. Then let's see. It's like your meditation is like having an insurance policy. I used to work in insurance for years. An insurance policy is something that you pay premiums on and hope to God you never have to use, you know, because I worked in life insurance. In order to collect it, your friends do and your loved ones do, you don't. But, you know, it's like paying up that insurance policy. Someday you may need that insurance. I may not need it today, but I want it to be there if the situation comes up where I have to have it. And that's where my prayer and meditation comes in. I pray and I meditate. And I may not be in a crisis situation today, or there might not be something terrible coming down, but I don't want to have to be. I used to do that all my life, those crisis communications, and going, God, 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 help me, God. Oh, my God, it's in a mess. I don't have to do that because I've got a daily contact. I've got a conscious contact so that when these situations come up, I don't have to reestablish a contact and feel guilty for asking for help when I hadn't been there before. And I used to live like that. But now I don't feel guilty about asking God for help. That's what he's there for. And when you have a good spiritual condition, you have more emotional balance in your life. A spiritual prayer and meditation will give you emotional balance. And it never dawned on me that I had to get well spiritually first so that I could get emotionally well, so that I could get physically well. I had lots of physical problems. I don't have near the problem of physical problems that I once had. And it's because I don't have the stress factor I once had. God has the stress. Don't you know God must be stressed out sometimes with all of us? God gives me blessing after blessing. And no matter how much I receive from God, He never gets tired of giving. And you know, my God enjoys the presence of my company. He enjoys hearing from me. Just like I think your parents do, or you would enjoy hearing from your children. You enjoy hearing good messages, not just, I need money. But hey, I love you. You know, I was a reading here a while back and it said, do you love God? You know, I was real concerned about the fact God loving me, and I didn't think about, did I love God? And I thought, well, do I love God? Now that's something to think about. I'm glad that I have God and I love God for what He does. Aha, but do I love God just for what He is? And then I got to looking around, and there's a piece of God in every one of you, and certainly I love God. I love the God in everybody, and I also love what my God has done for me as a person. Having had the spiritual awakening as the result of the steps, you're not going to get the spiritual awakening without doing the steps. There's a promise that you will get it. Now, for me, it was a gradual thing. That's what an awakening is. I am not a good, you know, the minute the alarm goes off, I don't go, ta-da! About 4 hours later, I go, ta-da, you know. But it says that you will be skyrocketed into a new plane of living. That's the happy, joyous, and free. That's where I'm trying to live now. I'm a spiritual being. God lives inside of me, so I try to take care of God's resting place. I try to get in contact with the God that lives within me. Now, one of the best ways that we can do practicing these principles and carrying the message, let's try sponsorship. Not from the giving end, but from the, I mean, not from the receiving end, but from the giving end. In sponsorship, I carry the message, not the person. I used to be guilty of trying to carry the person and trying to do it for them. You want it so bad for them, you'll do it for them, and they never get it. And you wonder why. They don't have to, because you're doing it for them. So I have learned that the best way that I can carry the message is by living it. By living it, not just talking it, but living it and showing them and having them around so they can see. I've tried to be a good sponsor, and I'm not always successful. I'm a human being. I make plenty of mistakes. And I think some of my earlier babies were my guinea pigs, you know, and they tell me now that I'm mellowing out, that I'm not near so vicious as I once was with the new ones. The new ones bitch all the time about it, but... You know, as a sponsor, we sow the seeds. That's all I'm responsible, to sow the seeds. But as a person, I'd like to be there and help cultivate and harvest the crop. I'd love to do that. That's not always the case. There was a little girl that kept calling me. She lived in another town, and when she would run away from home to Little Rock to a motel for the weekend, she would call and tell me how terrible things were in her life and ta-da-ta-da, and that she had my name and number. And I'd say, have you gone to meetings in where the town you're from? And she'd say, no, but I'm going to do that just as soon as I get back there. And the next time, a couple of months later, she'd be back up at the motel calling me again. And I'd say, well, have you been to the meeting? No, I just hadn't got around to doing that yet, but I'm going to do that. And so when she called the third time and she said, I'm up here. I said, have you been to me? She said, no. And I said, I'm sorry, I can't help you anymore. Do what I told you to do and don't call me back till you have. And hung up. And my husband looked at me and he said, that was one of the cruelest things I believe I ever saw a person do to another person. And I said, all I'm doing is keeping her from a meeting. I'm giving her a booster shot every time she calls. I said, I'm not really helping her. Well, a couple of years later, I was at a conference and this little girl came up to me and she said, I want to introduce myself. And it was this same little girl. She said, you made me so damn mad, I went back to them meetings just so I could call you again. I'm not saying that's the way to do it. I'm just saying that was my experience. Then there was a girl that came to our group and was there for a long time. And I tried so hard, and it just didn't seem to take, and she went away. And several years later, a friend of ours had been to St. Louis, and when they came in, they had met this girl there, and she was active up there. So you never know. The seeds that you plant today may not take root for a long time, but all I'm responsible for is to plant the seeds. Then it's in God's and their hands, whatever they do in their time. And you've got to remember, the program is not for people who need it. It's for people who want it. The little boy that's no longer with us today had three opportunities to make this program, and he didn't want it. God knows he needed it, but he didn't want it. I find that in sponsorship, I do best when I walk beside you instead of behind you trying to push you. I do better when I'm walking beside you. It's real funny. JD talked to me one time and he wanted to know if I'd be his sponsor. And I was sort of shocked by that, and I said, well, first your ego says, huh? And I said, you what? And he said, yeah, and that way I'd get to see some of you. Yeah. I had to look at that, And it was, I had gotten so carried away that I was not doing my homework. The program begins at home. A lot of times I think that when we first start working the program, we work it in our group, where it's real easy because everybody's going to accept you and love you even if you are just a real dip, You can squall all the time and they'll say, it's okay, keep coming back. But you got to take it home. And if you can't take it home, you don't have much with you. And home was the last place I took it. I took it to the office. I took it here, there, and everywhere. And finally, it hit me. You got to take the program home. And here my husband was, what he was saying is, you never have any time for me. And that was the truth. I don't know. We had gotten so, you know, they tell you take your focus off the alcoholic. I really did. And we'd become two different units instead of a home. He was going to his meetings, doing his thing, and I was over here going to my meetings, doing my thing, and we didn't have any our thing. We didn't have an our thing. So we had to take a look at that. And one of the things that was very good that came out of that was I found that I had a whole new person at home. That he had changed, and I had changed, and we were no longer the people we were. And in some instances, when this happens, you find in common the only thing you have was your sickness. And you don't have anything. But thank God that was not our case. And we found that we could love one another in recovery. We could accept each other as we were. But how we begin to do this was we began to practice the traditions in our relationships. And it never dawned on me that you could do that, but now think about it. If traditions can keep groups of sickies together and functioning okay, why couldn't it keep a couple of sickies functioning and together? And we begin to try to practice those principles. Now, you can't work the traditions at home if you can't do the steps. It won't work because you won't have the tools. But we started doing that. And we found that we could begin, and JD and I hold hands again, like little kids. We have fun. We can do things together without hassling one another because we both want to be there and we both want to make it work. I got into service in a big way. Alternate GR, GR, DR, all the little R's are. Area officers, I held area officers and all this kind of stuff. I found that for me at this point in my life, that I'm not active at the service level other than at my group right now. I'm our literature chairman. I got to make sure that they keep them damn blueprint for progress out of there. Believe it or not, I carry some. What did I do? What was I like before I got here as compared to what I have now? I'm not the same person I was when I came here. I have a message to carry now. I didn't have a message to carry then. I had sickness. And I carried it and passed it on real well. So I'm trying to do today is I'm trying to carry the message of recovery to show you what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm trying to be like one day at a time. And did you know 12-stepping can be done on anyone regardless of their time in the program? Because I have found it necessary sometimes to go to these old-timers and to be honest about what you're seeing. That's hard, but when you go up to somebody and say, you're not the same as you used to be. The joy seems to have gone out. I love you and I care. You can 12-step your old-timers. Principles above personalities. What if there's someone you just don't like? Did you ever meet anybody you just don't like? What have they got that you got? What is there about them that you do? That always irritates me, but that's the truth. Usually when I don't like somebody, it's because they're like I can be on any given day. And you know, every once in a while, God is really neat and shows you, how you used to be, lest you go back there. I was in Hawaii a couple of summers ago, and I got stranded down in the Waipio Valley, which is a very rustic area, and we were in the middle of a river at the time. And the tour guide, we were supposedly fording this river, and there had been a mudslide the night before, and the terrain had changed a little bit, and we went down, and the water came over, and we were there. And the water must have been about waist deep, I guess, and he said, well, we're here. Now, there was a man in that truck, or in that van, that said, get us out! And the Hawaiian said, we're here. He said, I can't. The starter's underwater. And this guy threw a fit. I mean a fit. And he ran up and down the bank for hours, just having a conniption. I was sitting over under the palm. Now, on the side of our van, it said, an adventure you'll not soon forget. I figured, this is it. And this guy kept running up and down, and he ran his mouth the whole time. Well, we had two rescue vehicles that come and got us before it was all over with, and it was a long ordeal for a whole day. But when we finally got back to the hotel, this one guy was just absolutely frothing at the mouth, cussing, screaming, hollering, said, "We're going to sue, we want our money back," da-da-da-da, and he was just going through all this, and he was trying to get a riot started from the people that were there in the van and get us all to attack the management of the hotel. And I'd listened about all that I wanted to hear all day long. And so when he came to me and he said, "What do you think?" I said, "It says an adventure you'll not soon forget. I got mine. I don't know what your problem is." And he just looked at me and I went on back to my room. Well, it was about 2 or 3 minutes after I got back, the hotel called and said they were refunding the money before he ever had a chance to jump them. But we listened to this guy for the rest of the tour. 2 weeks later, he's still bitching about this deal down in the front. And that was Mary Pearl. I saw me the way I used to be. And I said, you know, that's an humbling experience. Because I said, I used to bitch and rave and carry on and blow it out. You wouldn't even recognize that story by the time 2 weeks hence was from what it really was when it happened. He had that blown into such a big deal, you wouldn't believe it. They should be had their license stripped away from them. They should have done this. They should have done that. I never heard so much. And I thought, God, I am so glad I don't have to live like that anymore, that I have principles that I can live by. I found my place here. Did you ever feel like you never fit? I found my place. Did you know what I found like? I like to make coffee. I wouldn't drink that stuff for nothing. Hate coffee. But I make some of the best coffee for our group, and J.D. said I'm the best coffee maker for somebody that doesn't drink coffee, because he really drinks coffee. But I found that that was how I could go over there and help my group. I could go over there and open up the building and turn on the air conditioner so it'd be nice when everybody got there. Or I could go over and turn on the heat. Or I could be the literature chairman. Or I could do all these things. I could go over there and set up the tables. This is my place. My place is to be here. That's my home. And I don't want people coming in and cutting up my home. I get real protective about the building. There's another reason I'm protective about our building. Now, my grandfather died in the state hospital from alcoholism. But that man built the building that we meet in. So, you know, his life wasn't in vain, because even though he died of this disease, there's people every day of the world that are getting help in a place that he provided. And that's a special place. To me, it's like my home away from home. When I go in there, there's something about going through the door. I have peace. I'm home. I'm safe. I don't have to worry about being loved, accepted, or anything in here. This is safe. That's how I feel about Al-Anon. You know, the family afterward experiences the thing of supreme value in life. This is true only if one is willing to turn the past to good account. If I can live realizing what I've done that doesn't work and quit doing it that way, I can turn my past to good account. I can live better today because I know how to live today. I never knew how to live before. That's what the steps are for me. They're the guidelines for living. How I can live my life with the steps and the traditions will keep me in harmony with my God, myself, and my fellow man. They will work in all my relationships. I mean, even the casual people that you meet on the street. I'm going to tell you about, remember how I was so vicious at the grocery store? I'm going to tell you about me at the grocery store. I'm the kind of customer they love to have, because I go in, and my way of making amends is to be the most cheerful customer they've ever had. I get Christmas cards from bag boys. When they're going to move from one store to another at home, the assistant manager and one of the others, there's kind of a couple of checkers and a boy in the produce department, they came and they said, "Miss Thompson, we're moving over to Cantrell Road. Why don't you come over and shop there?" Now, Cantrell Road's on the other side of town from me, and I go over there because those are my friends now. I could never do that before. People actually want me to come in and shop at their store. And they said, "We always know we're going to have a good day when you come because you're always so up." I got my car fixed with this little boy. He's just started a new business. He's trying real hard. His wife said, "Miss Thompson, I took my car in and got it fixed on a Monday." She said, "This is the best Monday we've had in a long time. Your attitude is so good. Would you call us every Monday?" So when I'm home, I try to make a practice and I'll say, "This is your perky little Monday call. Are y'all having a good day down there today?" And she said, "You don't know how much that means." And I can tell you another thing. Do you know what kind of service I get at these places? You know, there's a spiritual principle. What goes round comes round. What you sow, you reap. When you do good for people, you get good back. It don't have to be from the ones you're doing it for. You know, I always thought I kept score. I've done this for you, so therefore you owe me this. Well, that's not the spiritual principle. The principle is just to give freely. Freely you receive, so freely you give. So I'm real good to you, and so what happens to me? I get my earrings back. That's what happens. I do good, good comes to me. When I do bad, bad comes to me. The other day I'm tooling down the road, and they've moved the Ups place. Now, they should never move the Ups place. I love the little Ups trucks. And they told me, they said, now it's east of the airport. Now, Tina's a north, south, east, and west, but I'm an up, down, left, and right. And so when this guy said east, I didn't know where the hell he was. So I got off and I said, God, come on, we're going to go find the Ups place. And I got off and I took this exit off the freeway and I got over there, and then there were three roads to choose from. Took a road. This can't be the way to Ups. I was in a really bad area, which I knew was not safe for a woman to be there alone. I could identify that. So I pulled in this driveway of this burnout house and I said, God, this can't be it. Where is the Ups place? I would really appreciate some direction. And about that time, I started backing out, and in my mirror, I caught an Ups truck, a little bound truck. I followed him all the way to this place. Now, several people said, what if he'd been making deliveries? God knew I needed to go to this place. He wasn't going to be making deliveries. Now, that's a little funny thing, right? Coming home from the Ups place, as I come off of the freeway, zooming, careening at 55 miles an hour, I have no brakes. I put my foot on the brakes and they go straight to the floor. This is a very busy exit intersection. I'm going, God, help me. And there wasn't a car in sight as I went sailing through that light. Not one. And I went on up to my place to get my car fixed. And when I wheeled it in, I said, William, I said, I did not have any brakes. I said, that is a terrifying feeling. And if God hadn't have been there, we'd have both been dead. And he said, well, I'll take a look at it. He said, when have you had your brakes? I said, never. You've never had your brakes worked on? Not on this one, never. It's a 1972 Chevrolet station wagon. Told you, God does maintenance on my car. So he called me back and he said, Miss Thompson, I don't believe this, but he said, that's the original stuff, but it's just your master cylinder. Your brakes are okay. So he said, it'll be ready for you a little later. And I went up there and got it. God takes care of the thing. God does for me what he knows. I told him, I said, God, now I can afford so much, but anything over that, it's yours. You'll have to figure out how to pay for that. So God just made it something I could afford. How do you repay your sponsor for what they've given to you? Did you ever think about that? I did. Boy, every birthday, Christmas, I rush in there with my friends. She said, I wish you wouldn't do so much of this. I said, why? She said, the way you repay me, there is no way. Because you get more out of sponsoring than the people you sponsor. And that is the gospel truth. Now, I could never have children. I was sterile. I was very resentful about that. Having been around small children, I know exactly that God was being very generous. He knew that I would do better with older kids, 20s, 30s, 40s, those. I have more kids than I know what to do with. One little girl came over to me a while ago and she said, did you know that you're my great-great-great-great-grandmother in sponsorship? What a lovely thing to have people that you don't even know that are part of your family. What a blessing. You know, the best thing that you can leave, you know, we're all going to leave at some point in time. We're all going to die. Is it that there's something that you might could leave to someone? If I could leave the program that I was given, and if just some part out there would be carried on, what greater thing could you be remembered by? What greater? And when the sponsorship's there, you've got it. You've got it going from generation to generation. And so as long as there's someone working the Al-Anon program, I will not have lived in vain. Because I am so grateful that there was someone there to pass that on to me. Communication was the first thing that went in our relationship, and it was the last thing to come back. It's real hard to be able to sit down and talk sense. That meant my way. Sense meant my way. But it is the last thing that comes back. But I found in that first thing when we prayed together about that convention, that was the beginning of communication. When we had the deal over the cigarette package, that was the beginning. There were so many little things. And now I can sit down and I can talk with JD. You know, we can talk about the most sensitive areas of our life and not feel threatened. We can talk about sex. And that was big growth. Very big growth. We can talk to each other and we can reason things out, you know, like it talks about in our book. We do not have to be afraid. There are no subjects that we can't talk about. Used to there was a whole list. The first was we can't talk about his drinking. We can't talk about his family. We can't talk about my family. We can't talk about my weight. We can't talk about his hair or lack of. There were a lot of very sensitive areas. And we're no longer threatened by those. It's that we have the freedom now to talk to one another because it's not a personal attack anymore. And when we bring God into that relationship, you see, the authority in our house is a loving God. And say, JD has an idea, it's got to be this way, and I have an idea, it's got to be that way. What do you do? Well, what you do is we both back off and we pray about it. And then God expresses himself, and either I give some and JD gives some, or I give a lot or JD gives a lot, or a third situation comes up, solution that you never knew was there, because God is in there. God stands between me and JD, holding my hand on one side and JD's on the other, and that makes us a fellowship of equals. With God in the middle, there could be nothing stronger. If I try to get over here and jerk around on JD, the things get out of whack. When I get self-willed and I want to tell him what to do instead of letting God tell him what to do, things get out of whack. And if I get back over here where I belong and leave JD alone with his God, then we have a good relationship. Having fun. I like having fun. Don't y'all like having fun? You know, I didn't know how to have fun. I was serious when I came. Serious. Everything that happened in my life was serious. Think of what all we've laughed about this weekend. Those things were not funny at the time. But there's healing in laughter. And when you can begin to laugh at yourself, and you can start first by laughing with me over my experiences, and maybe that will help you to laugh at yourself over some of the crazy cockamamie things that you do, we'll all get well together. I know one time having a sense of humor helps. I'd gotten stuck in JD's mother's front yard. I had buried the truck up to the axles. I'd gotten off of the driveway. I do not do backing up long distances very well. I do everything good on the short run. I'm not a marathoner, you know. But I was backing up and I got off the driveway and it had rained a lot and I just sunk right up to the axle. And JD got out and he cussed and raved and screamed and hollered. And that morning I'd made a decision that I was going to have a happy day regardless of what happened. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking about that, and JD's out there cussing that. And I got out and I walked around and I looked at it and I said, well, I'll be damned, it's still in the mud. That didn't help. And JD died laughing. And so did I. You know, it didn't help. That doesn't change it. The other day I came home, I'd been out of town for a few days, and I've got three clothes hampers I'm a very organized person. And I had three clothes hampers. I have one for linen, and I have one for clothes, and then I have one for work clothes. And so we have to fall within those categories. And in the bottom of the one with the linens was some good clothes. It didn't belong there. And I looked at that and I said, how many times must I tell you, don't? And he looked at me and he said, well, how important is it? And I ran over and I grabbed him by the throat and I said, that's really important. And he looked at me and he said, I got you. And we both laughed. It was either that or have to kill him. You know, but we can laugh at these things now. We can do these little playful things. We can play with one another like we never could before. We can have lots of fun. You got to avoid the deliberate manufacture of misery. Some of us get in there. Have you ever noticed how when everything's going real good, you've got this, I wonder when the axe is going to drop? So you begin then to look for the bad instead of enjoying the good while you got it. Capitalize on your good, because trouble's going to come. It always does. But all things come to pass. And that's what I didn't recognize. You know, good times pass. You're going to have bad times. You're going to have trouble times. There's going to be sickness. That's called living. But the bad times will pass, just as the good times will pass. So we're always in a transition period, if you will. And it's learning to roll with the flow and take it as it comes. I was always the salmon that goes upstream to spawn, you know, getting krilled on the rocks and crashing out right at the end, you know. That was it. That's how I lived life. But now I've learned that I can turn around and go with the flow, and it's a lot easier. You don't get near as many scrapes and banged up on your nervous system. So the program principles: honesty, love, dedication, freedom, happiness, joy, dignity, integrity, self-discipline, hope, acceptance, commitment, spirituality, humility. Those are some of the ones that I live by. Your list may include those and more. Make this your program. The 12 steps is a way of life. Make it your way of life. I guarantee you that you will become happy, joyous, and free. I love it in the book where it talks about, surely you'll meet some of us as we trudge the road. Don't you love that? Trudge. It's not skipping down the road. It's not just walking, running. It's trudge. And it is work. It's the hardest work you're ever going to do, but it's going to be the most rewarding that you're ever going to do. And after you do it long enough, it becomes a habit. It's so neat for me to see now the things that I used to do automatically, I don't do them so much, and that I'm more doing the newer stuff automatically. It's becoming second nature now. It's not as foreign to me as it once was. And that's what he's talking about, the practice. Doing it over and over and over. I have a problem with mechanical things. Do you ever have a problem with mechanical things? Don't you hate it when they break? I'd tell you what, I had the refrigerator down, the washing machine, the dryer. I've had so many things going wrong at the same time, and it would seem like to me it was a plague of things going wrong mechanically, and I didn't deal well with it. And guess what? More things would go wrong, and I didn't deal well with it. God has a tendency to keep putting these situations in front of you till you learn how to deal with them. And so finally I had asked God, I said, what's with the plague of the mechanical crap? I'm tired of this. I'm tired of it. And God said, I'll do something different. Okay? I'm going to do something different. I was cooking JD's supper. He was working nights. I was cooking supper. It was a little after midnight. Finished, turned off my gas stove, and the flame is still on. This happens to be the burner with the brain. I looked at it and I said, I guess you got brain damage too. Now it began to disturb me that the fire wouldn't go out, because now the thought says to my mind, what if the thing gets blown out? Then we'll be gassed to death. That worries me. So I call the gas company. Now they've got an emergency number. Now this is for gas meters. And the guy says, I don't know anything about gas stoves. I said, I don't either, except you turn them off and on. I turned it off and it's on. And he said, well, let me call one of the servicemen at home and see if they can tell you anything to do until tomorrow when the office opens. He said, I'll put you on hold and make a call. I said, okay. And all of a sudden, I smelled this funny smell, and it's not gas. It smells like, you know how when resistors are burning? And I look, and there's smoke pouring out of the top of my television while I'm on hold for the stove. So I go over there and I unplug the television. And the guy comes back on the phone and he said, we don't know what to tell you to do. We've never had one. I said, well, how are you on television? He said, what do you mean? I said, well, while I've been on hold, the TV's burned up. He said, from the stove? I said, no, on its own. He said, lady, how could you have a sense of humor with all this coming down? And I said, because I've learned that getting mad won't change it. And I haven't had... it's mechanical. I haven't had the plague. When things go out, it doesn't drive me crazy anymore. I overcome it because I had a chance. The 12 steps changed my life. They continue to change my life as I continue to work them. I'm the best me I've ever been, but I'm not as good as I would like to be. I'm not perfect by a long shot. I guess you figured that one out. But I'm not nearly as sick as I once was. There's progress. I can be comfortable with me and be comfortable with you. But more importantly, I'm comfortable with my God. I know that my God loves me. I'm not afraid. I'm loved. I'm forgiven, and I'm greatly blessed. My name is Mary Pearl Thompson, and I am a grateful recovering Al-Anon, grateful for the program of AA who let us borrow their steps. I am grateful for the recovery of my husband through the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I am grateful for the sickness that brought me to a place where I could learn how to live. And we have healing, the healing of our fellowship, that will take care of not only my personal sickness, but the relationship with my loved ones. I thank you for having me.